Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, the game hour number 3, live here on a Thursday. Nick Hale, Derek Mason, Marquise Munson with you. Braden's got the morning off. He will be back tomorrow. And right now, we welcome in the head coach from MTSU, Rick Stockstill. Coach Stock, how you doing this morning? We appreciate a couple of minutes.
Yeah, great. Appreciate you guys having me on today.
Great to get you in. But I got to tell you, you look at the schedule that you guys have had the first 4 weeks of this season, and, you know, we talk about, like, you know, Auburn's schedule is tough and Texas A&M's schedule is tough. I mean, I trip to number 7 Michigan, Duke at home, and now this week you head up to Iowa against the 14th-ranked Hawkeyes. This is a really tough stretch for you guys.
Yeah, you know, it has, and, you know, it's kind of been that way every year here, you know, the last 5 or 6 years where we play, you know, 3 Power 5 schools, and, you know, it's been tough. And, you know, we're like, I tell our team, and our team tells me, you know, we're not going to back down from anybody. You know, we're not going to flinch. But, you know, in the big picture, you know, over the years, that's why I'm so proud of, you know, what these teams have accomplished in the past, you know, to be able to still go to bowl games and play for your conference championship while playing the toughest schedule in our conference by far, you know, makes me proud of what these guys have done. And, yeah, we've come up on the short end of the stick in, you know, Michigan and Duke. And but we're playing really hard. We're playing with great effort. You know, we've just gotten beat by 2 teams that were, honestly, they were a lot better than us.
Now, Coach, for at least the last, you know, three years, you've been, your team knew what you had at quarterback with your son. You knew, he knew the offense. The guys believed in him. He was a leader on his team. So that's probably one position that you didn't have to too much worry about. Now you usher in a new quarterback in O'Hara. He's thrown 8 touchdowns. He rushed for another. How has that transition been for your team, and how has that been for the quarterback position?
You know, I think Asher's done a really nice job, you know, for the first 3 games. And, you know, hopefully he'll continue to get better, you know, the more snaps that he sees. You know, he's done a really nice job of creating things with his feet. You know, most of his rushing yardage has been come off of, you know, scrambles, you know, leaving the pocket and running more so than design quarterback runs. He's got to sit in the pocket a little bit better than what he's done these first 3 weeks and let some things develop. But I think, again, that'll come, you know, he'll get better at that, you know, as he gets more experience and more snaps. So, but, you know, we're starting to understand more and more what he can and can't do, what he likes and what he doesn't like. And I think every coach goes through that when you're, you know, bringing in, starting a new quarterback, and it's the first time he's ever really played. So, and then to do it against who we've had to do it against, you know, I think I'm still trying to, you know, get a really good feel of what this team is going to be, you know, once we get into conference play next week. And, but no, the team respects him, and you know, he's really done a nice job. He's probably exceeded, you know, our expectations after 3 games. He's probably played better. Honestly, he's probably played better than what he practiced in August.
Rick Stockstill, head coach, MTSU, joining us here on Morning Drive as the Blue Raiders go to Kinnick Stadium this week, take on 14th-ranked Iowa, 11 o'clock kickoff. You can hear that here on 102.5 The Game. So, Coach, you look at a team like Iowa, and quarterback Nate Stanley has yet to make a mistake this year. We know the brand of football that Iowa likes to play. What are some of the challenges that the Hawkeyes present to your team?
You know, the thing, when we played Michigan, you know, Michigan was so big, you know, so much bigger than us, but they spread you out. You know, they were shotgun 4 wide empty. So it wasn't as physical as a game as what it would have been if you'd have played Michigan a couple, 3 or 4 years ago. This Iowa team, they're ginormous. And just, they're so big and strong, and they're more of your, you know, typical what you think old school Big Ten teams are. You know, that they're going to line up in the I formation and they're just going to, you know, hammer the ball down us. And, you know, and then max protect and, you know, take play action, deep shots on us. So, you know, we've got to really do a good job of, you know, withstanding that. That's the thing that, you know, concerns me the most, I guess, to answer your question, is just, you know, their size and power. You know, are we going to be able to, you know, match up, hold up physically against them?
Now, do you think you're because you guys went to Michigan and they call it the Big House, but I swear it's the quietest Big House I've ever been in and played in with their fans. But did your players react the way you wanted them to react when they play in these bigger stadiums? They were able to score 21 points on Michigan. Now they're playing in another sort of big stadium, not as big as Michigan, but Iowa fans are rabid and they love going to games. Have your players reacted positively playing these bigger stadiums?
Yeah, you know, and it's not new. To me, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, this is our 15th Power Five, you know, or 14th Power Five in the last 5 years. So, you know, we go into these stadiums all the time, and, you know, we've been to Alabama. We were at Georgia last year, Alabama 2 years ago, Missouri. You know, all these different venues from Syracuse, you know, the ACC to the SEC to the Big Ten. So, you know, we're not in awe. We don't walk in there and say, wow. I will say this, when we're going to Michigan and driving to the stadium, I've never seen that many people tailgating in my life. You know, I was in awe of that. I mean, there, you make a turn and there's 25,000 tents here, and you make another turn, there's 20,000. It was really unbelievable. But, and I agree with you, it wasn't as loud as, you know, some of the stadiums we've been in. But no, we're used to it now. Mm-hmm. You know, we're ready for their pink locker room. You know, they got pink carpet, pink toilets, pink walls, you know, time to, you know, that deal there. So, you know, we've talked about it, and, you know, so we will not be in awe of it, no.
Coach, best of luck this week. Hang in there, and obviously conference play will be starting up really soon. We look forward to having you on down the road.
Sounds good, my man. Appreciate you guys. Have a great weekend.
You got it. Rick Stockstill, head coach. MTSU, I didn't know Iowa pink locker rooms.
Yeah, they got pink locker rooms, which nowadays it makes no sense because, you know, I know the psychological, you know, psychology behind, you know, having a pink locker room. It kind of softens you up a little bit and kind of mellows you out a little bit. But guys, you know, guys wear pink and they made pink fashionable for guys to wear. So they don't look at it as this soft and mellow type of thing. Now maybe they want to paint it a different color. What if they just paint no windows, just painted it all black?
Hey, I'll tell you right now, I wear pink
light bulbs.
I have no problem wearing pink. I wore pink shirt yesterday.
I have no problem with wearing pink either.
I love pink.
I have pink stripes in my in a few of my suits. So mm-hmm. if I'm a coach, I'm building a locker room, a lot of ventilation, but I'm building it where it has no windows. The window, I mean, the walls are painted a dark, dark color, and they have only like 5 light bulbs.
Mm-hmm. Your chance right now, win a 4-pack of tickets to see MTSU Blue Raider football as they take on Marshall at Floyd Stadium on Saturday, October the 5th. So they go to Iowa this week. Next week, they're back at home. But if you want a 4-pack of tickets, just be caller number 5 right now, 615-737-1025. Caller 5, 615-737-1025. We will come back and continue some college football discussion. I'm officially convinced that Jeremy Pruitt has lost his ever-loving mind. You'll find out why next. Welcome back in Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll get to Jeremy Pruitt coming up in just one moment. Two quick things in the NFL. It looks like Melvin Gordon mm-hmm. has ended his holdout. Will report to the Chargers camp. Will not play Sunday against the Dolphins, but his holdout is over. I don't know what he was doing or what he accomplished.
Well, he accomplished losing paychecks, I tell you
pretty
that.
Pretty much.
but he doesn't want to lose. I think he had to come in at a certain point, if I'm not mistaken. in order to get to become a free agent. I think he did, if I'm not mistaken. So, and then again, he's throwing, I mean, I don't know how much he's scheduled to make this year, but
I think 5 points.
Yeah, but that's still a lot of money you're leaving on the table, man. And, you know, yes, Le'Veon did it last year. But as good as you are, I don't, you're not Le'Veon Bell. You know, you're dealing with a whole bunch of other issues, injury issues. Le'Veon had his injuries, but still, mm-hmm. I think, you know, the Chargers are like, you know what, you have been really injured, and it doesn't help him that his backup is playing well too.
But there's, it feels like there's two end games to this. You either get the payday like Zeke got and you win the battle against your mm-hmm. owner and your manager, or you go to the extreme of Le'Veon Bell. You sit out a year, and granted, Le'Veon Bell lost some money, but he also gained some health, you know, a little less wear and tear, mm-hmm. less traction off the tires is gone. I feel like Melvin Gordon never really seemed like he had a game plan. It was like, all right, maybe I'm going to see if the Chargers will cave. And here they are. They're 1-2, and they're not caving. He's the one who's coming to camp.
Yeah. And you know what? It doesn't help when your quarterback make the comments that he made. And they were not bad comments, but he made it seem like, you know what, we're fine. We got other backs. That doesn't help in your holdout. You know, you would love for the quarterback to say, listen, we need Melvin. And he makes us a much better team. And we need to, hopefully he can get something done and we can get him back on the football field. That's what helped Melvin Gordon. But when everything is like dismissive,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't help a guy that's already been injured. He's a hell of a player. Will he be in L.A. next year? No, I don't think he will. He's just going there. It's basically formality. He's going because he almost have to in a sense. And he wants to be able to say, listen, this is what I can do as a player. So hopefully somebody else can play him. And I said this, and I think I said it off air yesterday. I wouldn't be surprised if Melvin Gordon ends up in Nashville because with what's going on with Derrick Henry, you don't know if he's going to sign back or not. Melvin Gordon gets you get a 2-for-1 with Melvin Gordon. You get a guy that doesn't need to come off the field on third down. You get a guy that can pass block and can run between the tackles mm-hmm. and has the speed to be a breakaway runner. The big thing with him is he got to stay healthy. So if he does hit the free agency market, if they are not willing to re-sign Derrick Henry right away, then he could be more than a viable option because now you don't have to keep Deion Lewis because he's a guy that can play all three. You can draft a guy.
Yeah. Well, that's actually an interesting point. And let's go a little further with that because you look at Derrick Henry. I would say since he's not a pass catcher, mm-hmm. the max that Derrick Henry should get is probably about $9 to $10 million mm-hmm. per year. Mm-hmm. Melvin Gordon's making $5 million. He should probably be making $10, $11, $12 million. He wants to be in the Zeke, Gurley, Bell range of $12, $13, $14 million. So if, let's just say, the season plays out, you're John Robinson, would you give Derrick Henry $9 million or Melvin Gordon $11 million?
Melvin Gordon $11 million. And it has nothing to do with what I think of Derrick Henry. I think Derrick Henry is a hell of a running back, but he's just a running back. That's all he is. He hasn't proven that he can catch the ball consistently for him to stay on the field for three downs.
I mean, look at it this way. Would you rather give Derrick Henry $10 million, Deion Lewis $5 million, or give Gordon $11 million and then pick up a guy in the fifth round that could be your change of pace back and pay $700,000 to?
Oh, I would rather do that. I can pay Gordon $11, $12 million. Draft a guy and still have another guy.
Right.
And still equal up to maybe a little bit over what I'm paying Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting a much better and complete back.
Yeah.
In Melvin Gordon. So, you know, if that indeed would happen, don't be surprised. If he hits free agency market, which I think he will, Gordon, if Derrick Henry, it looks as if they are not re-signing him here, which if he doesn't start catching the ball consistently out the backfield, I don't know if they will re-sign him here. You know, as good as he is a runner, he lacks in the passing category in a league that put a premium on pass catching running backs.
Okay, let's get to Jeremy Pruitt, because I couldn't believe, and I know there's coach speak, so like I'm not totally oblivious to the way coaches act in front of the media, but this was Jeremy Pruitt yesterday, and I could not believe what I heard when Jeremy Pruitt talked about the state of the program this year compared to 1 year ago. Take a listen.
Our football team is 100 times better than it was this time last year, okay? All right, and our guys are working hard. We're stronger. We're more physical. But when it comes to having success winning a football game, you can't turn the ball over, and you have to create turnovers, you know, and that's something that has hampered us in our three losses. Our guys are working hard. We're getting better on the offensive front. Our tight ends are playing winning football. We've got to be able to get the balls to our skill players.
All right. Okay. Thank you. That's enough. That's enough of Jeremy Pruitt. I've heard enough of the coach. All right. So you lose to Georgia State by 8 when you were technically down 15 late in the game. You lost in double overtime to BYU with inexplicably blown coverages. Your defense can't get aligned. You beat Chattanooga whoop-de-doo. And then you went into the swamp and lost by 31 points. Now, I wasn't predicting Tennessee to go in there and beat Florida, but you lost by 31. You've now turned the ball over 10 times against Dan Mullen in 2 years. I don't know. Maybe I don't have HDTV. Maybe I've got a 14-inch black-and-white television, and it's a little scrambled. But from what I see on television, I don't think they're remotely – I think they've regressed, much less 100 times better.
I don't know where he gets the 100 times better from. Because if they were 100 times better, they wouldn't have lost to Georgia State. If he was 100 times better, they wouldn't have blown a coverage and lost to BYU. If he was 100 times better, they wouldn't have turned the football over the way they did against Florida. So this is what people say when they hear nonsense like this. This is why people don't think he's the guy for the job. Because you can't blatantly say something like that when everything tells us that's not true. Your quarterback has regressed for whatever reason. He has regressed. You can say it's a new under a new system. That's why. But for whatever reason, your quarterback has regressed. Your defense is not playing well. They're giving up big plays. You lost to Georgia State. Oh, but you're 100 times better? Where at? Where? I don't see it. Like, Jeremy Pruitt, where?
I mean,
the attitude of the guys?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe slightly improved on the offensive line.
Yeah.
With the return of Trey Smith and then the 2 5-stars with Wanya Morris, but he went down with an injury. You look at it defensively, and, you know, you got a guy like Daniel Batuli, who's a nice player. Nigel Warrior's a nice player. And I know he's had some recruiting success since he's gotten there. But none of it is translating to the field. And if you go back to last year they defeated Auburn. Mm-hmm. That was the signature win for Jeremy Pruitt. Since then, I believe they're 3-10.
Yeah, so tell me where you are 100%.
I mean, I didn't major in math at Temple. Mm-hmm. I did broadcast journalism. But the 100%, I mean, I guess if you take 100 times 0, it's still 0.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the math Jeremy Pruitt's using. You know, I mean, he's 100 times. Well, if he was a 0 before, he's still a 0. Now you can times it by a million. A million times a 0 is still a 0.
I think he's just trying to convince himself that this team is better than what expected. Because even earlier in his press conference, he also mentioned, like, yeah, we haven't had any players transfer last year. But now this year, you got a couple players that transferred. So it's like, you know, now you're just trying to convince yourself that, you know, this team is better than what you think it is. And maybe that helps him get through the night. Maybe that gets him through his cereal in the morning. I don't know. But if he used to say that this team is 100% better after losing in 2 games that you should have won, losing to a blowout game in your SEC opener, and then you beat Chattanooga. So the Chattanooga is what you're saying is your 100% best? Because if that is, then that's awful.
Like my mama used to tell me, listen, you can lie to yourself, but you can't lie to me. You know, you can tell yourself whatever you want to tell yourself, but what I'm seeing and what you're doing is total opposite of what you're saying. So go ahead and lie to yourself, but you ain't lying to me.
Let's go to the psychology of a head coach who uses the media to speak to his players. He's not going to fool the fans. I don't know that you can actually convince your own players when you go to the media and say, oh, we're 100 times better than we were last year. The guys, especially the upperclassmen on that team, the seniors and the juniors, the two-year starter, the three-year starter, they're looking around and they're saying, this is no different than last year. Yeah. It might actually be worse.
Yeah, I can see if you walked in and say, listen, we are getting better. We're getting better in certain areas as a team. We need so what he's saying is that they don't need to get better. Because if he's saying they're 100 times better than what they were last year, then you don't need to get better.
I mean, if you're a 5-win team last year, and right now, and again, if you want to look at the schedule.
I don't see no more wins other than maybe this week.
Well, this week's the bye.
Yeah, this week's the bye,
yeah,
so they won.
Tennessee's a 3-point favorite over the bye. I'm going to lay the 3 this week. I think Tennessee should cover. But they've got UAB on November 2nd at home.
And UAB's not a cakewalk.
That's not a cakewalk, but where are the SEC wins? Georgia's a loss. Mississippi State at home. At the beginning of the year, I would have thought coin flip, but that's a loss. Bama, South Carolina, loss. South Carolina, beginning of the year, I thought coin flip. Now I'm thinking loss. At Kentucky, at Missouri, home for Vanderbilt. You've had trouble against Vanderbilt 4 of the last 6 years. I mean, this team's trending right now for 2 or 3 wins.
Yeah, and then if you only, and I know that you take it game by game, I get it, but if you're only picking up 3 wins in a season where last year you had 5, how can you tell me or convince me or lie to me and say we are 100 times better? I don't know. Maybe his 100 times better is out of a billion. You know, we're 100 times better, but out of a billion. Then, okay, I can see, which means you hadn't gotten any better. But when you say, when you get up there and you say we are 100 times better, then the next follow-up question should have been, well, why isn't it translating to wins? Why do you lose to Georgia State? Why do you lose to BYU and you blow a coverage? Why do you lose to Florida in the fashion that you lose to Florida in? If you're telling me you're 100 times better, then give me, back it up. I can see if you're saying, hey, listen, we are better than we were, you know, 2 weeks ago. We're a little bit better than we were 2 weeks ago. But to say we're 100 times better than what we were last year, well, if that's the case, then show me how. You can't.
You know what's so frustrating about this is I'm now of the belief, this has been a rough week for me for football. I've come to the realization Marcus isn't the guy. I was a Pruitt advocate. I have serious doubts about Pruitt. You know, you can sit there and say Pruitt's not the guy, and I'm starting to believe he's not. But what do you do? I mean, because, let's face it, Robert Nealon's not out there. Johnny Majors is not out there. Philip Fulmer is, but will be nothing more than a stopgap. You almost have to, because of the constant turnover, and I hate to say this for Vols fans, but you might have to just deal with it for like 3 or 4 more years and hope that the administration gives the guy the amount of time to definitively find out if he's the guy or if he's just a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Does he get like a Stoops, like an allotment of time where you get 5 years to show gradual growth?
No, because UT is not UK. And at UK, they don't have this steep tradition of winning.
Yeah, but tradition's got to be damned at this point.
I know.
I mean, those glory days are long gone.
You're absolutely right.
You almost
right.
have to forget it exists.
No, and many people don't want that to happen. That's why they think, you know, Tennessee should be Florida, Alabama, and LSU, and anybody else that is having success in the SEC. We could talk about this on the other side further.
All right.
But it's just, I don't know. We can spend hours on this.
Back after this on Morning Drive. It is Morning Drive. Welcome back in 8:33 live here on a Wednesday edition of the show. Nick DeMays, Marquise. Braden will be back tomorrow. A lot to do for the final 90 minutes of the show. We got to stick to sports. That is coming up at 8:45. Joe Rexroad at 9 o'clock. Our buddy Greg Wyshynski will make his first appearance. That is coming up 1 hour from now at 9:30 as we'll get some Preds talk from him as well as some NHL previews and predictions, but discussing Jeremy Pruitt, and it is just staggering that the head coach in year two could go from 5 wins, and I guess if you think about it, with the way they've started the first month of the season, five wins looks incredible last year.
Like, he's going from bad to great.
Yeah, the Titans are trying to go from good to great. The Vols are going from, you know, okay to even worse. And the coach says, oh, we're 100 times better than we were a year ago at this point. And I mentioned this right before the break. You almost, Mace, have to look at this program now and be resigned to the fact that you have to give Pruitt the time, because if you fire him after 2 years, you start the process again, new recruits, new system, and it just becomes a cyclical disaster of losing. You almost have to look at this program like we had Will Healy on yesterday, head coach at Charlotte, formerly at Austin Peay. Mm-hmm. You almost have to look at Tennessee like a startup program going from FCS football to FBS football, and just accept the fact that it's going to be a slow, painful, hopefully successful rebuild over maybe 4 or 5 years. Like, if you just think it's going to go from 5 wins to 7 wins to 9 wins to competing for an Eastern Division to getting to Atlanta to making a New Year's Six Bowl to competing for the playoff, you're sadly mistaken.
Vol fans don't want to hear that.
I know they don't, and I don't blame them, but sometimes you have to accept your reality.
Yeah, you absolutely.
Whether you
right.
like it or
and
not.
The quicker you accept your reality, the better. The quicker you can change it. But fans, Vol fans don't want to hear that. That's why I don't believe they will give Jeremy Pruitt that much time. They won't be the Kentucky of the SEC East, meaning giving Stoops an opportunity to change that program. They're not going to give him that much time. And rightfully so. They have the resources, they have the facilities to go from winning 5 games to winning 8 games at least. So I'm not going to sit here as a AD or as a fan base and say, you know what, let's give Pruitt, you know, 6-7 years to fix this. No, you don't have 6-7 years. You have, you know, 3-4 years to get this thing back on track and show some improvement. If you don't, then, you know, unfortunately, we might have to go in another direction. Because, again, we're not Kentucky. We're not, you know, Missouri. We're not some of these other programs that are not steeped in, you know, winning tradition, like championships, winning championships and winning SEC championships. We are a program that, you know, that for a long period of time, we're used to winning. And for the last decade, it hadn't been that way, with the exception of a few seasons here and there. Last 2 decades, it hadn't been that way. Would I love for Jeremy Pruitt to have more than 4 years? Yes. Just like I said about Derek Mason, I think, you know, in a situation like that, he needs more than 4 years to fix a program. Well, here's the difference between Vandy and UT.
Well, Pruitt's got resources.
Yeah, Pruitt has resources. He has the backing of a bunch of people. Well, Derek Mason doesn't have all that. So I expect Jeremy Pruitt, as I'm sure he does, and the Vol fans, to turn this program around ASAP. You can't do it by losing to Georgia State. You can't do it by losing to BYU and blowing coverages. You can't do it by losing to Florida the same way you lost to them last year, turning the football over. You know, you can't do it and say my program is improving.
Well, if you think about it, Tennessee, in some respects, very similar to Michigan. With when Michigan had Lloyd Carr, they were really good. They won a national championship. Tennessee, Philip Fulmer, really good, won a national championship. Since both of those guys left, and we know who the Vols have gone through with coaches, but from Michigan's perspective, you've gone through Brady Hoke, you've gone through Rich Rodriguez, and then you finally land the guy that you coveted most. And I'm not saying that Jim Harbaugh is coveted by Michigan like Tennessee fans covet Jeremy Pruitt, but the point is, Michigan finally got the guy they got that they wanted, and he has not proven to be a guy that could get the program over the top. They can't beat Ohio State. They've struggled versus Michigan State. We give you all the stats yesterday of all of his failures. What's to say, even if Philip Fulmer finds his guy moving beyond Jeremy Pruitt, that second guy, that it's going to meet the expectations of Vols fans?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Because Vols fans want to be Alabama and Georgia.
And that's the problem. Vols fans, you're not Alabama. You're not Georgia. You are UT. You are what you are right now at this point of time. It's going to take you a very long time to become Alabama, if you even get there. It's going to take you a very long time to become Georgia, if you even get there.
At this rate, it might take a long time to be what Dan Mullen's doing at Florida.
Exactly. So it's just hard because it's almost as if, you know, UT, this is the bed that you made. Vol fans, you fussed and brought out your pitchforks and everything else when they wanted to hire Schiano, and you fabricated all this stuff about Schiano, which wasn't true, and this is what you're left with. Deal with it.
At this point, Jeremy Pruitt's got 6 wins in his career at Tennessee. Mm-hmm. You brought up Schiano. If Greg Schiano was the head coach today, would they have a total of more than 6 wins of the Schiano era?
I think so. You look at Schiano's track record, what he did at Rutgers and other teams. Is he a national championship winning coach?
No.
No. Is he going to get you 11 wins per season? Probably not. But he's going to damn sure win you more than 5 games. You know you're going to have a personality, an identity with Greg Schiano and his team. You know what you're going to get. You don't know what you're getting with Pruitt. You don't know what the identity of this team is. And after a year, I mean, we should know by now what the identity of this team is, and we don't.
Right now, it's your chance to make some college football picks with the 3 college underdogs that you think will win this Saturday. Silly Underdogs is back. This weekly winner will win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville sporting event or concert. Just hit up thegamenashville.com or the ESPN Game Nashville mobile app and play today. Silly Underdog Picks is brought to you by the Volunteer Hose and Gasket. We will come back a busy final hour in 15 minutes. We've got Stick to Sports and then Joe Rexroad at the top of the hour. Back after this on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is Morning Drive. Welcome back in ESPN 102.5 The Game. We try to avoid cell phones on this show. We haven't had a good track record with them. We got to do a remix of this. We'll call it the landline. I need to make landlines great again.
Please do. I got a landline.
You really do?
Yeah. Here's the thing about landlines.
I love a landline phone.
I've been trying to figure this out. The day I got my landline, and I got it for, you know, certain reasons, but the day I got my landline, it's a new phone number, granted, very new phone number. I don't even know the damn number. I swear, 10 minutes after they hooked the phone up and got it going, I started getting calls, like, from just random people. And,
like telemarketers? Yeah.
Like, how the hell they get that number that fast?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, and nowadays, they've got these systems where they can use your phone number and call you from a made-up number that almost looks identical to your own number.
Yeah.
It's off by like 1 or 2 digits in hopes that you'll answer the phone. Because they're always trying to stay one step ahead to get you on the phone.
I never answer the phone.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I never. My phone said, such and such is calling. Such and such is calling.
Wait, so you really don't know the number to your landline?
No, I don't. I got it plugged in my phone somewhere, but I don't know.
Dude, you sound like my father-in-law.
Uh-huh.
He said, I was with him one time, and somebody asked him, what's your number? And he goes, well, how do I know? I don't call myself. And I'm thinking, dude, you got to know your own number.
I know my cell number, but my landline I don't know.
I'm just looking at him like, yeah, of course you don't call yourself. You dope. All right, let's stick to sports.
The world is a crazy place.
Crazy sounding pretty good right now.
Let's lighten the mood.
After all that seriousness, you're just going to crumple it up and throw it in the trash.
Basically.
And stick to sports. Now, on Morning Drive.
All right, D-May, Stick to Sports is brought to you by
the good folks at Decorating Den Interior. Stick with the pros at Decorating Den. When you're ready to decorate your home, office, or outdoor spaces, request a complimentary appointment at DecoratingDen.com.
Now, I have no idea where we are going with this segment today because Hollywood actually is wearing sunglasses in the studio right now to ask these questions.
Number one.
Got to put a little swagger to this one, man.
This could be really good today or really bad.
Yeah, it's probably going to be in between both. Philly fans, man, look, we've been talking about Philly fans all week. We had the Philly fan that, you know, was catching babies like unlike Nelson Aguilar, and he got famous for that. This one Philly fan, and this is from the game from this Sunday, cussed out his own fan base because, you know, fans argue about calls in the stands, and this guy overheard him arguing about a call. So here's this Philly fan intervening on this fan having a conversation about a play call or a missed call on the field.
Learn football, bro. He can't tell it. It's an automatic review by the proof. He can't tell it. He will lose the call. Shut the f*** and learn football, right? I'm tired of it. Shut up.
Yeah, he's a clown, so I had to put... You know, clown. That wasn't my sound effects, but yeah.
So you worked out the censor button there a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, the censor button. This is the beep is so generic nowadays. You know what I mean? So
I have no idea what the fan was saying. I couldn't make it out. What he said?
Well, he basically said, you know, "st, shut up," or mm-hmm. "shut up" with a cuss word in it. And he also said that, you know, learn the call, learn football. You know, shut up. I'm sick and tired of this. And I don't know what this fan... I guess he gets into altercations often at, you know, Philly arenas. But, mm-hmm. you know, he just was frustrated, man. Another frustrated Philly fan in the stands cussing people out and can't get through a football game without having to, you know, spill expletives at other people. Philly fans, ladies and gentlemen.
Philly fans, Philadelphia Eagles make you want to curse, I guess.
I can't defend my people.
Yeah.
There are times where my people act like savages.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that was probably in the upper deck.
Yeah, no,
I'm guessing that was some guy from somewhere in Philadelphia had too many pops. He probably had about 7 to 12 Miller Lights.
Probably had a Brian Dawkins jersey on.
Probably had a Brian Dawkins jersey on, a bad mustache, a pack of cigarettes.
Are you allowed to bring cigarettes into stadiums?
You'd be surprised what Philadelphia fans bring into a stadium. You'd be surprised.
Number two.
Do you think Tennessee fans have had it rough prior to the Eagles winning a Super Bowl 2 years ago? That city had it rough.
I'm sure.
How old were you guys when you guys started driving?
16.
Yeah, around 16, 17.
All right, so in Las Vegas, there was a kid, 9 years old, that took his mom's car while she was in the shower and went for a little joyride 6 miles from where he lived at. No one was hurt, obviously, but someone noticed a suspicious child driving a automobile, and the kid ended up being 9 years old, and no one was hurt. No citations were issued, but this kid, 9 years old, took the car for a spin in Las Vegas. I guess he was trying to, you know, go to the Mandalay Bay. I don't know where he was trying to go in Vegas.
No, he was trying to place a bet.
Yeah, that's what I kind of thought.
He wanted to take the Vols -3 against the bye.
Yeah.
Hopped in mom's car, got on the road.
Hopped in my car, too.
Exactly.
That was the case. Man, what... Kids, I mean, kids are just like...
But how big do you have to be as a 9-year-old to, yeah. A, get your foot on the gas pedal and still be able to see the road and steer? I mean...
Well, I have to be a big
phone
kid.
Phone books, I guess? I don't
but still, book. Your foot has to hit the pedal. Either that was a small car, like one of those...
A Toyota Prius?
Yeah, one of those little smart two-seaters. Car. Or that has to be a big 9-year-old. Because I'm trying to figure out... I wasn't taking my mom a car at 9. Oh, my goodness. You would have got a beat down.
Oh, yeah. I would have got a beat down.
Man.
You remember there was a story in 2008 of Latarian Milton. He was a, like, 7-year-old kid that took his grandma's car for a joyride, and he, like, ran into, like, parked cars and Krogers and stuff. If you didn't remember it, I'm going to play you a little audio clip of it. Here is Latarian Milton at 7 years old driving a vehicle in 2008.
I took my grandma's car because I got mad at my mom, and then I suddenly had my friend come in, and he smoked with cigarettes.
Along the way, he ran over two mailboxes, hit two parked cars in a Costco parking lot, and struck two moving cars near Walmart.
I want to do it because it's fun. It's fun to do bad things, to drive into a car.
But did you know that you could perhaps kill somebody?
Yes, but I wanted to do hood rat stuff with my friend.
Yeah, so basically, have you guys never heard that audio before?
No, I have never heard that in my
That's
life.
That's from 2008. So, and you remember the show The Boondocks, they did a spoof episode of this kid. Uh-huh. Basically, like, this kid becomes best friends with Riley, who's one of the characters of the Boondocks. Uh-huh. And he just makes Riley do all kind of, like, crazy stuff. And then it was a spinoff of this and the movie Juice from 2PAC.
Yeah.
And,
man, what is wrong with kids nowadays? And I know that happened some years ago, but his explanation, hey, I guess it was honest.
He just wanted to do hood rat stuff.
He wanted to do hood rat stuff.
He hit a couple of parked cars and mailboxes.
Yeah.
You want to hear
why his friend smoked cigarettes?
Here's a good story. So my parents got divorced when I was probably 11. Uh-huh. So 1995. And my dad's lawyer for the divorce was his best friend from high school. So my mom and dad went through like a really ugly divorce. They were in domestic relations court every week over custody and child support, all that type of stuff. So my dad's lawyer comes up to me. He goes, look, I got your dad. We're in domestic relations every week. I got my other buddy that I represent that I went to high school with who decided to drink a pint of whiskey after a bowl game, and then go out and go shopping, hit 3 parked cars, and knocked over 7 mailboxes. He goes, you think being a lawyer is fun and making a lot of money? Look at the 2 guys I'm representing. One is your dad. The other one decided to go grocery shopping after he was liquored up. Every time I hear hitting parked cars and hitting mailboxes, I think of that story.
Oh, my goodness.
Could you imagine that?
Like I don't want to imagine that.
No, no.
I don't want
to. Like, there was a time where I thought about going to law school.
Uh-huh.
Like, when I was in high school, I wanted to go to law school.
Uh-huh.
I could not imagine representing somebody who hit a bunch of parked cars and mailboxes.
Oh, man.
Like, how do you defend that guy?
You just take his money, I guess.
Your Honor, we'll take whatever you give us. My client's a dope.
Oh,
Number three.
All right, this is a weird transition of because this is a divorce story, actually.
Oh.
A woman divorced.
Is it about my parents?
Oh, man. Oh, man.
No, man. Okay.
No, I'm just checking.
A woman divorces her video game addict husband for their wedding DJ. Now, this woman divorced her husband after he was, you know, obsessed with playing video games. She even was quoted as saying, my marriage ended because I was not fully happy and not getting what I needed out of it. I guess her husband needed to go to Cool Springs MD. But my ex-husband was addicted to video games, basically became his life, and I was non-existent. So I guess a year later, she met up with this DJ at their wedding, and then now they're dating and about to get married. So congratulations to her for finding love again, but damn, you got to watch out who you bring around your wife around these days.
Okay, here's the thing. Before you married this guy, you had to have known
that he was addicted.
That he was addicted to video games. You had to have, because he had to have played those video games while you were around.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't something that you just, you play video games after the marriage. Cool. No. You knew the man played video games. You knew he played it a lot.
And I think video game addiction is a real thing.
No, it is.
People just can't put the controller down.
It is. I wonder, does he have a job? Because that would have been the reason why I got a divorce, because his butt don't want to work.
I was never a big video game guy, but I did play Madden. Like, that would be the only video game I would get each and every August when the new Madden game came out. I probably played that until I was 29, 30 years old, and I was married at 24.
Oh, wow.
Now, I didn't have an addiction. I'd play, you know, 2 games a week, you know, when I had 45 minutes of free time. But, no, I think it's a real thing.
Yeah, I actually went on a date, and this girl was like, you know, usually the question's like, what do you do in your spare time? And usually I drink bourbon and whiskey. I watch college football, and sometimes I play video games every now and then. And she kind of like gave me a weird look, like, oh, you still play video games? I'm like, yeah, what's wrong with playing Madden or 2K? I'm not playing World of Warcraft or nothing. I'm not addicted to that stuff. You know, kudos to anybody that is. That's just not my game. But I play Madden and 2K when the homies come over and we play video games. Like, this, I think it's fine, but some people just kind of get weirded out, like, oh, you play video games, that's just, you're so immature.
Playing video games is not immature. I just don't have the patience to play video games anymore. I mean, I tried to, even, you know, some months ago, I tried to play one video game, and it was like I played it for an hour maybe, and I just like get impatient. I'm like, I can't play this.
Be honest, though. Did you play Madden while you were as a player and played as yourself on Madden?
Yeah. But I stopped playing it when I couldn't just throw the ball up, like run all goals and throw the ball up and catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Once it got a bit too, I was like, I don't want to play this.
Yeah, because I used to always play with the Titans when I played Madden. Like, always.
There you go.
Because Michael Vick, there was a rule when you play Madden, you can't play with Michael Vick because it was like a cheat code. It was like,
too good.
Yeah, it was too good. So it was unfair. So my second favorite quarterback was Steve McNair. Mm-hmm. So I would play as Steve McNair and just throw it to D-Mace or throw it to Eddie George.
There you go.
So there you go.
Okay, that's it. Stick to sports.
Madden legend here.
Yeah.
Derek Mason.
I'll take everybody here in Madden right now.
No, you wouldn't.
We have a Madden tournament at this station.
You
I will
still
win.
Wouldn't
no,
be.
No, you
still
wouldn't
Madden
beat me.
Get off the stick, son.
I hadn't played Madden in years, and you wouldn't beat me.
I go up tempo.
Yeah, what system are we playing on?
Don't matter.
Okay.
PS4, Xbox One, you name it.
We should do it. Like, I should bring my PlayStation into the studio, and we should just play Madden on that big TV that we got.
Send the idea down to the sales department.
You think
Let's go.
Allow us to do that.
Yeah, they did a NHL 2K19 last year, or whatever the game
oh,
is.
Yeah,
for,
you're right. They did do
for
that, yeah.
EA Sports.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They did. So see, we can do that. We can hook it up to the TV, and then bam.
All right. Coming up next, our buddy Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Stay there. It's Morning Drive.